This is the Draft Prospect Review Podcast from Patriots.com. Think you know who the Pats will take in the first round? Want to know what positions the team is targeting? We'll let you know what we think. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this Draft Prospect Review Podcast with the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.
That's right. It's draft time again. We are working towards April. Eric Scalavino alongside Andy Hart and Paul Perillo. Eric and I just got back from the NFL Scouting Combine.
Another one in the books. They go by fast.
They do. It's an overwhelming week, not only for the prospects, but for all those of us trying to cover it. As we try to, you know, as Bill Belichick always says, you kind of scramble once the season's done to catch up with the scouts and learn, you know, all the different names and talents that are available. That's what PFW is doing. That's what we did last week.
And historic combine because the aforementioned Bill Belichick graced us with his presence on the final day that we were there. So that was a rare treat.
It was a rare treat, and he joked a little bit in that press conference about he's a little more familiar this year with the prospects at the Combine because he started the process I just talked about in the last week of December when the season ended.
Yep.
He had a full month and a half to prepare for it. But an interesting Combine in a lot of ways, as they always are. So, Eric, we're going to use this show to sort of review what we saw there, and then next week we'll really start to get into some of the positions, and as we move towards draft weekend, try to narrow it down as to who we think the Patriots could pick, the positions they're going to focus on. But first, initial reactions I want to ask you for, and I think these are obvious, or there's some obvious choices. Risers and fallers who made money on the turf of Lucas Oil Stadium, and who lost money, not necessarily on the turf of Lucas Oil Stadium, but
somewhere,
in the city of
somewhere
Indianapolis.
Around there, yeah. Obviously, you and I both like the defensive end slash outside linebacker, Brian Arakpo from Texas.
He's a bad Malafala.
Oh, boy, he really is. And the thing that impressed us most, or at least me, I can't speak for you, but he had a great interview with the media, came across very polished, very poised. But one of the things he said was he wasn't going to kill himself on the bench press. You know, a lot of guys go in there thinking, you know, I gotta set the record for the bench press. He was like, hey, you know what? I know I'm strong. You know, when I get to about 20, anything over 25 is fine. And he probably could have done more than his 31, but he figured, you know what? I'm just showing off at that point.
Right.
So whatever.
Mike Kudla from Ohio State, the big bench guy from a couple years ago, he's probably out of the league now. So
Ryan
Arakpo has, you know, intentions of being a football player, not a bench phenom.
Right. Liked what he said about his versatility, being able to play either of those positions, either a 3-4 or a 4-3. I saw him play a couple times this year with Texas. The guy's obviously got phenomenal talent, but he has more than that. He's got the brains for it. He's got the personality. I really like him.
And
he's got
that.
Some experience.
He's played a variety of roles for Texas under Muschamp's system down there. And we know, we've talked about it before, how much Bill has raved about Muschamp's coaching ability and prepping Jonathan Wilhite for the team this year. So that would obviously benefit Arakpo. Now, the problem from a Patriots perspective, and as I said, we'll get into specific positions down the road, is he came in as a hot prospect and left as a hotter prospect, which means he may not be on the board whenever the Patriots
probably
have a chance
not.
To pick.
Probably not, depending on what happens with, you know, trades that may or may not happen between now and the draft. But certainly, if the Patriots are in a position to get him, oh boy, it's going to be tough to look past him.
One thing, just listening to you guys talk about all the different prospects that really stuck out to me was this particular area, this, you know, the hybrid defensive end outside linebacker guy. I'm really excited about that because of the potential that could mean for the Patriots and their system. And we're always looking at guys that might be able to make that transition. Well, this year, it seems like there really is a large assortment of those players that either have shown the ability in college. You know, the Clint, I started talking on the way down here about Clint Sintem, and Al Groh, I was reading a bunch of stuff, talked about all the different ways that he was used at Virginia as a 3-4 outside linebacker. He said a lot of guys don't like him because he's not a candidate to play inside in a 4-3. He's strictly a 3-4 outside guy, which limits him. But he has been in coverage. He's been in as an edge pass rusher with his hand on the ground. He's dropped. He's played special teams. He's extremely athletic. And according to Al Groh, you know, who has an obvious wealth of professional experience, he can do everything you need him to do right away. So I'm really excited about guys like that. And based on what you guys have talked about, there's a handful of players like that in this draft. I think that's the most exciting thing.
Well, it's a double-edged sword this year because there is probably a half dozen of those guys that you can find someone to rave about. But there's also more teams looking for those guys, and that those were two major topics at the Combine. Every year the topic is the tweener guys, the hybrids outside, how can they make the transition in the 3-4. This year a big topic was part of it being Patriots-related, and as the disciples move on, and, you know, Dom Capers goes to Green Bay, he's bringing the 3-4. Josh McDaniels is on record saying, you will see some 3-4 from us. So there's more of those teams. You know, the competition and the Patriots' way and the style of defense and all that is greater. But along those lines, Paul, with the positives of the draft, the needs marrying with the Patriots, Kevin Colbert, I asked him about the edge rushers. He said, yeah, that's
Pittsburgh's
a great group.
And VP Kevin, of football ops.
VP of director of football ops for the Steelers, one of the best in the business at his job, said the two things that jumped to his mind were the edge rushers and cornerbacks. So if you're a Patriots fan, based on what you saw last year with a lack of pass rush and a lack of coverage, sounds like it could be a pretty good draft.
It was unfortunate, Paul, that Sintem was actually one of the very few guys who wasn't brought into the media room to speak with us. And can only speculate as to why, but it was a little disappointing because he was one of the guys we had on our list that we really wanted to talk to, given, like you said, his versatility, but also the connection between Al Groh and Bill Belichick, the thinking being that that kind of thing typically helps a player come to this team. And it would have been nice to just get his impressions about that.
Now, you and Andy also were in agreement on a couple of guys that on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of rising and falling. Mm-hmm. Offensive tackles. One did himself
Smitty.
A lot of a lot of good, and one probably not so much.
A tale of two Smiths, I think
call
it. Jason Smith from Baylor, one of the best combine interviews I've seen. He was great. He was funny. He was with it. Had good numbers. We haven't seen his tape yet, but performed well at the combine. The other Smith, Andre from Alabama, lost. Clueless. I mean, didn't know if he was going to work out, which a lot of guys come in doing that. But he was saying he wasn't sure. He was going to talk about it with his agent. And then somebody asked him about his agent, and he wasn't sure really about his agent, whether he had one or not, or who he was signing with. Then he went AWOL for a while. He went missing. Nobody. He didn't tell anybody where he was going. I think they eventually found him.
They did.
But
he had flown home early to supposedly start working out in preparation for his pro day so he could be.
Yeah.
But miscommunication on about six different levels, seems immature, was suspended for his last game at Alabama, the bowl game. So the red flags are just popping up left and right here.
Yeah.
And I'd say not just Jason Smith, but Eugene Monroe, another talented left tackle from the University of Virginia back to Al Groh's team. Basically the guy that kept Brandon Albert at guard. Is coming out. I thought he handled himself very well, tested very well.
Yep.
So, you know, Andre Smith, who is, by all accounts, a phenomenal or phenom-type athlete and could be great as a left tackle, when you're talking about 30s and 40s of millions of dollars, he doesn't have the total package. And somebody might get a steal as a late first, second-round pick,
right.
But I think anybody that rolls
himself,
dice with him is just absolutely crazy because he's got all the signs so far of being a bust and a waste of talent.
Another tackle who I got a very questionable vibe from was Michael Orr, the kid from Mississippi. He's got this big book written about him, and people have sort of he became a name before he even got to the combine because of that. But I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with what I saw of him just in that little media portion. I mean, like I said, we still have to look at tape of these guys, but it's much better to make an impression on a guy when you've actually gotten to see him in person and then look at him on tape, because
right.
I think you can make some connections there between what and projecting what they might be like. And first impressions aren't always accurate, but I just didn't get a good feeling from him.
And we're talking about some of the needs and just glossing over our initial reactions at the scouting combine. We'll get into specific position-by-position looks in the coming weeks. I thought inside linebacker is an intriguing position. You know, there's some fans that still think the Patriots need to look in that direction, maybe early on, to solidify that position, to add a teammate to Gerard Mayo. Ray Mauluga had a hamstring issue, but beyond that, I thought he was impressive. I like him. James Laurinaitis, a guy whose stock has kind of fallen almost for no specific reason. It's that he kind of came onto the scene so early into his career. It's almost like he's one of those guys, he's been around so long, and he didn't have 17 sacks last year, so what's wrong with him?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the poster child for all these people tell him to stay in school. He stays in school. He keeps producing, making plays, but his stock drops.
He's not the flavor of the month anymore.
Right, and I think those would be the guys I'd point to when people say, well, I'm not going to stay in school because he performed. you know, go get me the tape where that shows him missing tackles and playing significantly worse than he had in the past. I don't think that exists, and yet he's not thought of. The buzz isn't quite there around him. Mm-hmm. Other positions, tight end, a lot of buzz about pass catching, spread formation type tight ends. Chase Kaufman out of Missouri, the kid from Florida, Ingram coming back from a knee injury. Rice is James Casey, and the kid from Oklahoma State, considered the top tight end in the draft, Pettigrew. Actually ran a slow 40 time, is considered the only all-around tight end who has the ability to be an inline blocker and a pass catcher. He ran, I think, 4.8s in the 40, which is obviously not very good for, you start comparing him to Vernon Davis types, pass-catching tight ends that run down in the four high 4.4s or 4.5s. But I thought there was a lot of interesting players that could marry up with the Patriots' needs. Cornerback is another position where you find anywhere in those first couple rounds, whatever kind of corner you're looking for, he exists. If you want the 5'8" guy who's quick but might not have the top-end flat speed, they got him. If you got the big guy, the Michael Jenkins type, who could be a tweener corner safety, you got him. If you want the zone guy, he's there. The man guy, he's there. So I think particularly in this draft, and I know it happens every year, but I think there's a lot of positions where it really truly is scheme specific.
Right.
And there are going to be teams that love player A because of X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. where other teams think he's a fifth round pick and they like this B guy over here because he can do,
right,
you know, Q, R, and S.
Right.
And I think that's going to be interesting for us to try to analyze in the coming months as to, well, the Patriots have kind of become a zone cover two team. Which corners fit that? Or, you know, the more of a zone blocking system, you know, which tackle fits that,
right,
or whatever.
And it's going to be harder to predict then who goes where in the first round, because you could say, well, depending on who this team takes as a surefire bet for their system, it could affect the rest of the draft,
right,
because someone you think, oh, it's natural that this guy's going to go. Well, but if there are three or four teams in a row who think that he doesn't fit their system, all of a sudden,
right,
you've got a guy who drops for no, you know, not because he's not any good, it's just that
the fit wasn't there.
And then all of a sudden, maybe somebody falls into your lap that you're not expecting.
And Josh McDaniels touched on that, tying into the Patriots way and the 3-4 schemes that, you know, we're all looking for good, you know, the Pioli thing, tough, smart football players. But not all teams are looking for the same type of tough, smart football player.
Mm-hmm.
There are different guys there. But if you are a McDaniels and, you know, you see the Patriots are ahead of you and, you know, Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
well, I mean, you might have to start thinking, well, if I really want this guy, he's going to go to one of those teams. I'm going to have to trade up 4 spots to get ahead of him. The one thing I want us to be careful with it before we wrap this up is this mindset we have right now, that it's an interesting draft and system-specific could really vary the way guys go in not only the first round but throughout the draft. I want us to keep that mindset moving forward, because I think sometimes we come back from the combine thinking that, and then we move closer and we start – you know, we, like anybody else, we read the mock drafts, and all of a sudden all these mocks are falling into place, and you're like, well, it's obvious. You know, the first 25 picks,
yep,
are just, it just makes a lot of sense. And then we get to draft weekend, and we're stunned that a guy we thought was going to go 16,
right,
is on the board at 33 when we're starting the second round of the draft. So I want us to try to project this open mind moving forward, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you.
Let's...
We're not going to fall into that mock draft trap crap.
No. You know what? We'll do our own mock drafts, and we'll do that keeping that in mind.
And there'll be no trap crap. I'm going to use that again. I like it.
That's right. Just be careful how you say that and how many times fast you say that.
Trap crap. Okay. Paul Perillo, anything else to close this one out before we start breaking down the positions? You're our expert here from the CAA. A quick side note, Paul Perillo's Northeastern tight end.
Disappointing,
though. One of the sadder stories of the combine, Brian Mandeville, who is right there on the edge of getting drafted,
mid-round pick,
at the combine, and they apparently find a problem with his heart. Send him home and sort of advised him never to play football or do any heavy lifting ever again.
Yeah.
He's apparently going to seek some alternate opinions. But a sad story, because a lower-level guy there was considered an elite prospect at tight end, one of the top 5 to 7, and you know, right on the verge of a pro career, and it kind of
ended before it started.
Down.
But, you know, look at it the other way, and it's better to find out this way than
laying on the field somewhere.
Of course, yeah.
Very nice kid, by the way.
But like
Northeastern turns out a nice young lad.
Right. They can't play, but, you know, they're good people.
They really can't play. They won't let them.
But like Lieutenant Weinberg, I have no responsibilities here whatsoever, so you can wrap this up.
All right, that's going to do it for our first of many 2009 NFL Draft Prospect Reviews as we preview the upcoming NFL Draft, all the prospects, all the positions, all the Patriots' needs, and how that may all come together late in April when we all go, wow, Mel Kiper wrong again.
2 months from today, I believe.
2 months from today, Eric says. I believe him. But 1 week from today, we'll be back here next Wednesday to start off the position-by-position look at the 2009 prospects. Peace out.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from Patriots.com. Log on anytime for more news and more podcasts from your favorite team and Patriots.com.